you get to have this like inner dom, inner submissive relationship with yourself. And it's like other people can think about it of like the inner masculine and the inner feminine. But I love to think of like the dom as like obviously the person, not necessarily in the sense of control, but I think of dominant energy as your ability to influence the energy that's moving through you. So it's like, I'm not going to control my emotions. I'm going to influence the direction that they can go in. And can you be your inner dom in that sense?
Hello, lovers. Welcome to another episode of Girls Gone Deep. This is V here, and Elle and I are so excited to be bringing another super juicy conversation to you today. This one is with the one and only Jacqueline Michelle. She is a sensuality mentor and muse and a sensual shibari practitioner. She specializes in supporting women deepening their relationship with their body, feeling the magnitude of their emotions, and creating a life of personal fulfillment from the inside out. We have such a beautiful conversation with her, covering everything from conscious sex work and strip clubs to solo kink, from shibari to relearning to tune into your body when you disassociate, healing trauma through movement and self-love practices, and how all of this makes you a better you for all of your relationships and for the world. So we're super excited to bring this to you. Please, as always, write to us at girlsgonedeep@gmail.com if you have any comments or questions after the show. Also, DM us at girlsgonedeeppod on Instagram. Without further ado, here's our chat. Listening to her voice for the past like 48 hours nonstop. It feels like I've been living in this like beautiful, you know, sensual space and just living in this like female empowerment and embodiment that you talk about and preach. And it's so gorgeous.
Thank you. Yeah. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it has been amazing. So I'm really excited to talk to you now.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. I'm excited.
So just to start, I'm Elle.
And I'm V.
And we have Jacqueline here today. So Jacqueline, thank you. So Jacqueline, tell us who you are. Where are you from and what's your business?
For sure. So like just in like the simplest of terms, I'm a Texas girl, Dallas, Texas, born and raised. Moved to Miami, Florida about a year ago. And in 2020, I started my business in female embodiment, sensuality mentorship. And it's been this super long journey of just like really helping women, myself included, just reclaiming their sensuality, their sexuality, their power in a way that infuses spirituality in with the flesh. Because years of kind of going into yoga and tantra and experimenting with like the physiological and somatic effects of kink, I'm like, oh wow, there's actually so much bliss and healing and transformation that can happen when you just tap into your body. But the way that I got into this, which I feel is like what really kind of hones everything together, is, you know, I come from a background of like 15 years of incest and childhood sexual abuse. And that was something that was going widespread throughout my whole family. And I share that because people meet me today and they're like, oh, you're so sensual. You're so empowered. You're so this. And it's like, it's been a really, really, really thick journey of actually tapping into what it actually is to feel your trauma, to feel your shame, to feel the disgust that we end up holding on to from not only abuse like that, but societal and religious indoctrination. And when I talk about sensuality, I don't just mean like the beautiful oils and the roses and the beautiful movement. I literally mean tapping into the full spectrum of the human experience and feeling every single thing that life offers you, and understanding like, yes, there's going to be times where we are unfortunately victims, but we also get the opportunity to not only transition into survivorhood, but be like kind of blossom into just being empowered as women. And that is like the whole mission of my work. And I do it through like coaching, and I love to explore shibari and sensual movement, but it's all with this like helping us come and actually live in our bodies. 100 years in our bodies is all we got to do. And the more that we acquire the skill to dive into it, the more juicy it gets to be.
Oh, you have such a journey. Oh, my goodness.
And you're so fired up when you talk about it. It's so beautiful. And you practice what you preach. I think – thank you so much for sharing that with us about, you know, your history. And I think that to know – if I were to come to you, to know that you have worked through your own stuff and come from very deep, heavy stuff and come to this place where you are, it's like, oh, my God, I can do it too.
Yeah.
So what kind of stuff did you first kind of start diving into to heal yourself?
Yeah. So my healing journey actually started on accident. I was like 18 or 19 years old. I was in college getting – I was going to study criminal psychology, forensic psychology. And my dance professor one day came up to me and she was like, hey, if you want extra credits, like come to my yoga class. And at the time I was a weightlifter and you know, all the things. And I was like, sure, whatever. This will be like an easy extra credit thing. And I went into my first yoga class that she was teaching. And, you know, before that I was dealing with depression. I was dealing with self-harm. I was dealing with substance abuse. So I was dealing with my trauma in a very body-based way, but not in a conscious way. And I kid you not, I stood at the front of my mat and I took that, you know, the first breath where they have you like reach your arms up and bring it down. And it was like an immediate light switch of like, oh my God, I've been running from my body this entire time. And it was like, when I tell you I got like addicted to yoga, it was almost like I was those annoying, like embarrassing, like you need to do yoga, like type of thing. Like it was like a good year and a half of people like, all right, Jack, like please shut up. But I will say like it taught me so much about like, number one, just like meditating, like creating that space in between thoughts and like really just being conscientious of like, okay, what are the things that I'm telling myself? I had a lot of paranoia. I had a lot of anxiety, and then just making it a point to like kind of relax into that. And then actually like breathing into my muscles, like breathing into where activation was happening or breathing into like where stretching was happening. And it's such an interesting thing because what helped me connect to my body was yoga. But simultaneously, while I was becoming more body aware, my sex drive completely dissipated. And so it was this weird, like if like I always envisioned it like these two cups and it's like body awareness went up, but like sexual libido and sexual everything. I became anorgasmic. I became like fearful of sex. I was in a 5-year relationship and sex had to come to a halt. So it was like this very weird thing. And it wasn't until somewhere along the way, I stumbled into Tantra. And Tantra was that first introduction to anybody ever speaking to me and saying, your sexuality gets to be sacred. Your sexuality gets to be yours. Your sexuality also gets to be spiritual. And I started therapy at like 6 years old and was going to therapy all until I was like, all right, this shit's not working. Like, not that it wasn't working. It was just more of like, I was organizing my trauma versus actually moving beyond it. And so once I got into like self-pleasure and Tantra is very big on like all aspects of you are sacred and they do a lot of emotional release work and actually how to feel your emotions. And once I learned those two things, I realized like, oh, this is the missing piece in mental health, at least from my perspective. Because like I said, I was going to school for psychology and I was like, oh, we are hyper-focusing on the mind. We're hyper-focusing on organizing the trauma. And I think it is, again, very important to understand it. But there has to come to a certain point, especially as survivors and especially as women or people in general that are wanting to feel safe having sex again. You have to go into the body. You have to feel the nitty gritty. So like just implementing holistic body-based practices was like the bee's knees.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, amen to yoga because I'm a yoga practicer for like 5 years. I totally resonated with you when you said it brought me into my body mm-hmm. to feel my muscles stretch. Mm-hmm. That body awareness was so there. But like you said, the missing piece is it doesn't address the emotional aspect of why is my muscle tight? Could it be an emotion that is making me feel this way? So I love that you found Tantra as a way to release that. And again, another thing you said was like talk therapy. It's like the primary mode. And what I'm finding out the more that I'm in this industry of like sex and lifestyle is that it comes back to coming to the body and like the healing through the kink and the Tantra and the somatic exercises where you truly get actually out of your mind and into your body. So Yeah, so awesome.
We always say that at sex parties when I'm like spiraling out. We have this mantra now that we've come up with on the podcast. It's get out of your head and into your body with someone else.
Hey, I love that.
So can you go into like describing, you use the word sensuality. So like what is sensuality and like how many dimensions are there to it or aspects to it? I know you've talked about this on your podcast that we've listened to. So
we're about to go into like a crash course. Go for it, B. What's up?
And can I just like pause for a second? I just have this like desire as I'm like talking to you to like kind of just like touch myself and like graze my hands over like my womanly, beautiful body. Like I'm just so grateful for this body that I'm in, and talking about this stuff just really makes me feel that way.
Lights us up.
Thank you for this conversation.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Funny, just a quick little side note. The other night I was teasing Justin, my partner, because I woke up in the middle of the night. You know how like we sometimes will do like random things when we're sleeping? And I woke up in the middle of the night and he is caressing his body. Like he's sensually caressing his torso, and it's like the middle of the night we're sleeping. And I'm like, I kind of peek my eyes open. I'm like, oh, is he about to masturbate? Like, what's happening here? You know? And then I realized, I was like, oh no, he's asleep. Like he was dead asleep, caressing himself. And
loving
it was like,
himself.
Oh my God.
I was like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. He just like rolled over, like nothing happened after a minute or two, but I was like, oh, this is epic.
That's so cute. So he's feeling his sensuality.
You know what's wild? Is he's more sensual than I am. Like he is just so when he goes into his erotic body or like his sensual body, he's so acute to like energy and slowing down and like teasing and all the things. And it's really beautiful. I love it. But so men can be sensual too. They're also sensual creatures.
100%.
But,
So, what is sensuality?
For sure. So, yeah, we're going to go into like a little bit of a crash course, of course, because this is how I start like all of my workshops, all of my trainings, is going into like how I perceive the different dimensions of sensuality. And I think about it from two different lenses, right? We talk about sensuality from the inside out and sensuality from the outside in. And usually when we think of sensuality, it's the outside in. We think about, again, like I said, the roses, the oils, the sensual movement. We think about that really beautiful environment that we get to connect ourselves with. And I think that's amazing, especially for people that are living in like a very mundane like type of lifestyle, to pause and create those times where you are creating a sacred space, or you are beautifying the way that you put your rice and beans on a plate, or, you know, whatever it is, right? Just to give a very light example. But if we think about sensuality as a whole and what it means by definition, it really is just connecting to your five senses, what it is that you're tasting, feeling, smelling, touching, etc. And it's super interesting because I hear so many women say like, oh, I'm not sensual. I don't know how to be sensual. And what I'm really hearing from that is I don't know how to be in my body. And so when it comes to sensuality from the outside in, it's not only reserved for the times that you have a bubble bath going and you're about to get an oil massage from your partner. Can you also be tuned in and tapped in to all of your five senses when you're stuck in traffic, when you're really bloated and you're looking in the mirror and you're like, fuck, I don't really like how I feel, or you're arguing with your partner, or you're arguing with a coworker? Like, can you still be devoted to being aware of what it is that you're looking at, what it is that you're smelling, what it is that you're feeling over and on top of the skin? And something just like that can really, like we were saying a second ago, help you drop out of the head and into the body. And it becomes an actual practice, especially when we are hardwired and overly stimulated of like going 101 miles an hour up here in the brain, right? Like everything, even if we're being mindful and like taking time in nature, we're oftentimes, you know, we may find ourselves narrating like, oh, that's a really nice tree. Oh, that's a beautiful flower, versus just finding silence inside of the mind and trusting that your eyes can absorb that beautiful flower and absorb, you know, the landscape without the mind needing to tell you, oh, let's enjoy this. Can the body actually help you enjoy this? Can the body actually help you absorb it? And so that's when I think about sensuality from, you know, the outside in, of really being devoted to being present with the life around you. And again, I love to kind of like fuse this in with other elements of like our spiritual practice, or how we can kind of like interweave through life, is like, it's not just about happiness. It's not just about the highs. We also get to be really present in with the lows. We also get to be just as in love and just as self-accepting and just as present when shit isn't pretty. And I think that in and of itself is like, I think that's like such a beautiful first step of like, cool, this is how I'm going to begin to embark in my sensuality journey. And I love to remind women that, because again, like I was saying earlier, we have this big ideology or this perception that for us to be sensual, it has to look a certain way. I have to move my body in a certain way. I have to dress a certain way. My femininity has to look in a certain way. In reality, it's like, why in the ginormous scheme of things, like, why would you want to put yourself in a little box of what femininity is supposed to look like, or how you're supposed to move, or what you're supposed to look like, you know, et cetera. And then when I start thinking about sensuality from the inside out, I break that out into three different layers: the physical, the emotional, and the mental. And I wish I had a graph right now. And the physical, we love to explore that in four different ways, right? One is, where are you feeling tension in the body? Where is the constriction? Where is the contraction? And just bringing your awareness to that. Oftentimes when we're exploring our sensuality, even in the beginning, and we kind of have this very masculine approach to life, because we always feel like, oh, I need to get to the next level, or I need to fix something. And what would happen if you just went into your body and felt the tension, felt the constriction, but without needing to do anything about it? Oh, I'm not going to go into my shoulder and stretch my shoulder so I can open up. It's like, oh, let me just feel for a second, what's alive when I'm not doing anything but being present with myself? What can I discover? What can I notice? What can I actually feel without judgment? And then in the same breath, what about the parts of your body that feel juicy, that feel alive, that feel like, oh my God, there's butterflies here, right? And it's so interesting, because oftentimes we talk a lot about like, there's people that, you know, will do everything in their power to suppress anger, or to suppress, you know, constriction, or to suppress pain. But there's some people out there where that is the comfortable area of their life. They're accustomed to these emotions and these sensations, so this is their addiction. But when it's time to become happy or excited, that's when the panic comes in. Oh, no, I can't feel that, right? And same with arousal. There's some women out there that when arousal comes up, that's when the discomfort comes. That's the like the edginess of it. So again, how can we begin to go into just the sensations of what's happening underneath the skin, and without needing to do anything? And that's like the key thing. We're not going.
So how can you? Are you just tuning in? Are you meditating? Or
yeah. So I would say like the meditating, it's so interesting, because I'll be like, okay, just feel it. And it's so interesting because the mind kind of goes into like, okay, but how? Like, how do I feel it? And it's like, yeah. Oh wait, no, like it's really like, if you just want to explore it with me right now, like you can just caress any part of your body and just feel it. And then do your best. Like when it comes to the meditation portion, and I love that you said that, oftentimes we think about meditation as sitting in stillness and creating space between thoughts, right? And I love that. I also love to introduce meditation as allowing that point of focus to be the point of contact. And like, that's where your breath goes. That's where your awareness goes. Or, you know, we're talking about underneath the skin. So can your awareness just go into the constriction? Can it go into the juiciness? In the beginning, because we're not accustomed to being hardcore meditators, we're not monks that are doing it for hours and hours on end, you're probably going to be like, oh, I noticed this. And then you're going to go to your to-do list. And it's like, oh yeah, I need to come back. And then you go somewhere else, and then you come back. So it's one of those things where it's like, we don't have to take coming back home into our body so seriously. It's not like if your mind left you 50 times in 2 minutes that you're doing it wrong. It's just like, oh no, this is just part of the thing.
Sorry. Yeah. This just reminds me of, side note, you know, you had said in another podcast episode that you were on, you said similarly, where do we feel certain emotions in the body? When we gain awareness around where thoughts are sending energy in our body, we get an opportunity to think, do I want to do more or less of that? And we can make more conscious decisions of how we interact with those feelings. And I love that, because I do talk therapy. Funnily enough, I literally just came off of my talk therapy session, and then I came straight into this. So I'm like, I'm in a very open space right now. But, you know, I do talk therapy, and we really focus on, okay, if I'm feeling this way, it doesn't mean I have to act on those feelings. How does it sit in my body? Where does it come up? And I was like, oh my God, my therapist, like, is this tantra? Is this, what is this? What is this? I don't know, where did you come up with these ideas? Is it the Jungian like shadow self, or like the body keeps the score, or like what?
A fusion of everything, all the above. I read the body keeps the score for sure. Some like somatic workshops and stuff that I've done, going into my own practice, tantra, things that I've learned from like watching things that like, there's so much beautiful information, and it's so interesting because they all kind of say the same thing. So it's just really nice and relieving to kind of know like, oh, it just depends on like what type of sprinkle or like filter you want over it, but how you want to approach it, you know? But yeah, like going into the body and feeling your emotions and noticing how they, again, actually feel. There's a reason they say feel your feelings. It's like, it's literally that. How is it making a nest in my body? And what do I want to do with that energy, whether it's a quote unquote positive or quote unquote negative sensation?
Yeah. So interesting. Like this whole inside out thing. So what I thought about instantly was just the other night I was playing with my partner, M, and we have the new Enjoy toy, which is, you know, it's the U-shaped toy with the two balls on the end, and it's meant for G-spot play and prostate play. And so I hadn't used it yet on myself. And so I had to kind of, I almost was a little bit like uncomfortable, like, okay, I got to figure out how to use this. And this was me using this tool on myself and trying to feel everything that I wanted to feel, but I was having a hard time staying in my body because my partner was watching me and he was right there and he was, you know, and I was like, I just need to figure this out. So I had to close my eyes and I had to just breathe a little bit. And it took me a good, like, and I just had to say, like, take as long as you need. There's no judgment. He's going to watch you for however long this is going to take. You don't have to put on a show. Just feel into it. And it took me about 5 minutes. Like I really let myself take that time, but I felt a little bit of resistance when I was doing that. And I was like, I kept going into my head and saying, no, come back to my body. So it's so like interesting when you talk about being in the masculine, because it's always in the brain. It's always so focused. It's go, go, go. And as feminine, as women, we need to be in our bodies feeling, and it takes training because we're so much in our masculine these days. So when you said that, I really appreciated it. And then I also realized my resistance that I had and the struggle that I had with that. So are those the type of like exercises that you would do with your clients, or like the work that you do? How do you facilitate these embodiment experiences and guide people through these kind of emotions and feelings?
Yeah, essentially through that. I teach them like a solid foundation of tools, which is the different tiers of meditation, so that they know the different ways that they can actually begin to create space from the thoughts, whether they want to do it in stillness and body-based practices or out in the world, because I'm a strong believer that we're doing all these practices so that we can go out and live more. And then, yeah, teaching women how to actually feel their emotions, how to process them. There's something that is called shadow alchemy, which is people have emotional alchemy. You can call it that as well, which is using movement, sound, and breath to manipulate and release and transmute the energy, the emotion that's circulating through your body. I also teach women how to like move sensually and intuitively. And that's, you know, there's six ingredients that I work with that, you know, really teach women that. And then I'm in therapy as well. So like, I do still love that talk notion of it. And it's also like, I love just continuously asking the question, why? Well, why? Or what does that mean? Or where is that coming from? And it's interesting that once you have like this intimate conversation, that's kind of like untangling the ways in which we perceive ourselves, then all of a sudden it's like, oh shit, well, why is that there? And then it's interesting because once we get to that root, I love to take my time. I'm like, I'm a Taurus, so I'm very like slow and steady and all the movement that I love to do. And it's like, okay, now that we get to the seed, before going into a game plan on how to like shift it, can we just feel it? Can we just accept that that's there? And just be like, oh, okay, I'm just going to feel into this for a little bit. I'm not going to need to like, you know, do all of the things. And I've noticed that once we actually feel into the emotion or feel into the trigger or feel into the belief system and we actually accept it and being there, I've noticed that it kind of dissipates itself. It melts itself away and it becomes a lot more easier to begin to build on top of something that already feels accepted to begin with versus, oh, this is here. Let me now stack a new pattern on top of it.
Yeah, once you bring awareness to it, the more you see it, the more you're able to. I like that visualization of like melting it away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The word that stuck out to me was alchemy, which is obviously changing energy, moving it and flowing it into something different. And so, you know, my understanding of energy and emotions and traumas are that, you know, when you feel a certain emotion, if you resist it, whether that be through flight, you're running away, you're hiding in your phone, into drugs, into sex, or maybe you're fighting, you're defensive, you argue, you deny, or maybe you freeze and you just do nothing at all. That process of not handling the emotion stops the emotion dead in its tracks. Mm-hmm. And then it gets trapped somewhere in the body or in your energy field. And so this, what it sounds like to me, is this process of feeling into that emotion is allowing you to bring that from subconscious awareness to conscious awareness. And you're just accepting it. You're breathing into it. Hey, I know that you're here now and I'm going to let you go. And it's like moving it out of the body in a conscious way, which is a beautiful, beautiful thing to do. So,
and so some ways that you do that, you have beautiful videos on your Instagram. If anybody wants to check this out, obviously go check in the description, check out Jack Mitch on Instagram. She'll spell it out for you later. Yeah. But erotic movement. And what else do you practice? So you have a personal practice of erotic movement into solo shibari or self-bondage?
Yeah, so it's correct? Like a correct mundo. So it's a fusion of riding, sensual movement, rope bondage / sensory play. It's not always rope. Sometimes I just use my hands or I'll use feathers or oils, and then into a more intimate like self-pleasure practice. I'll start massaging my vulva or doing, you know, yoni mapping and things like that. So it's all under the umbrella for me of like a self-pleasure practice.
So what does the movement itself do for you?
It depends.
And correct me if I'm wrong. Did you used to be a stripper?
I was a stripper. Yeah. Yes. And that's a whole other thing.
Your moves are fire, girl.
Thank you. But it's funny because
I'm like, how is she not shut down on Instagram? I'm like getting hot watching this. And it's just so beautiful and sensual.
Thank you. I had to tone it back a lot. My account actually got suspended 5 times last year and then deleted. So I had to like, it was a whole ordeal. But I taught myself how to floor work in the beginning of my sexual healing journey. And then I was doing that for like alone in my room for a solid maybe 4 or 5 years. And I finally got to the point where I was like, I need an audience. Like I can't continue to like not do this alone in my room. And so, I mean, there was a whole lot more that went into my stripping journey, but it was a really, really, really powerful time. And I loved that whole aspect of it.
But so you still do it solo, right? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I assume you use it in the courses that you teach. And yeah. So what does like moving through the body do for someone?
Yeah, I think the simplest way that I love to put it, and I love to call it more intuitive movement, then I'll kind of go back and forth between calling it intuitive and sensual. But I think the number one thing behind it is like, our bodies are capable of so much in general. Like we have joints that can go 360 degrees and can do all these things. And yet the majority of the time, what we're doing is sitting, laying down and standing up. And it's like, imagine if we know that our body and our emotions are interlinked with one another and our emotions are linked with our, you know, mental narrative. And if we ourselves are keeping our body stagnant and stiff, then like what else is happening emotionally and mentally to us as well? So I love to even introduce it, especially to some of the women that may be a little bit more resistant to erotic dancing, because that can feel a little shameful, or the story can come up of like, oh no, not me, you know, things like that. It's just like, okay, let's just become curious of like what your body's capable of and like what can you actually feel. The fourth ingredient to sensual movement is just following the stretch. So it's like, okay, go to a part of the body where it's stuck, and then you go there, and then eventually the body will be like, okay, now let's go here. All right, now let's go there. And then, all right, let's go somewhere else. And it becomes like this, that's where the spiraling, that's where like all this beautiful motion comes from, right? And I feel like you can, just to kind of bring it into dancing, you can tell a big difference between somebody who's an emotional dancer, who's passionate, and somebody who's just like, all right, step 1, step 2, step 3, steps 4, right? And it's because you can feel the circulation, you can feel the actual embodiment of the motion, not just the steps of it. And then as we know, and I mean, I love when people go into like a yoga practice and they get a back massage, like just a regular one, and they come out in tears and they're like, oh, I love when it happens when like they don't have that expectation, because it's just like, it's just beautiful evidence of like, oh yeah, like we do need this somatic release, and it does have the opportunity to come out. So whenever we go and we go into our bodies in this way, like, it can become very erotic. It can be like, fuck yeah, I'm going to spread my own legs open and I'm going to massage my breasts and spiral through my spine. And like, to actually do that for yourself, like alone in your room without this performance, without this like, oh my God, somebody might see me. Like, it's a completely different way of exploring your sexual body that can be very liberating. It can be very expansive. And then same with like, if you're experiencing like anger, like how do you want to move? How do you want to dance when you're fucking pissed off or when you feel disgusted or when you feel sorrow? Like, can you allow your body to tell a story? Can you like just really allow yourself to like go into it versus just keeping that narrative in the mind and in a stagnant body, you know?
And I feel like practicing these things, like you're just so much more in touch with your body, and that just translates into everything, into mm-hmm. everyday life, into your sex life, into our ethically non-monogamous relationships. Like, mm-hmm. oh my God, how you walk into the room and into a sex party, people like, oh God, mm-hmm. people oozing confidence like that. It's amazing.
My only experience with this type of dance, this intuitive dance, I did an ecstatic dance before that was like a 2-hour session. I ended up showing up in this room. I was with Svetlana and 2MM and our friend JB. And so we went into this ecstatic dance. It's 2 hours long and they're playing this music and there's no talking. You're not allowed to talk. You just dance. And I remember being, holy crap, like this is really uncomfortable. But then like after like a few minutes, you just started dancing with yourself and then you started to mesh and you started to flow and dance with other people. I was dancing with strangers and I didn't even know their name or who they were or what
we
were
doing. And you were fully sober.
Fully sober. This was 11 o'clock during the day, just working through that shame of what do I look like? How do I look like? How should I be dancing right now? Is this right? Is this wrong? What are we doing here? To the point where by the end, I didn't give a fuck what I looked like. And I felt so liberated, so free, so in my body. I ended up doing like a primal crawling on the floor with somebody else. Like we were just so feeling into it. And I was like, what is happening right now? But it was exhilarating. And so it just made me think of that experience of how dance can be so freeing and liberating and that I personally need to do it more. I don't often dance by myself. I don't often, you know, watch myself in the mirror in that way. And I'm inspired now to really do that work.
I've also gone to an ecstatic dance event here in New York City, and I remember afterwards just being so sweaty and feeling so alive mm-hmm. and just like vibrating, like my whole being was vibrating. And Jacqueline, I remember listening to you talking about there was a point in your stripping career where you kind of tuned into yourself and discovered what made you feel sexiest. When do you feel sexy? Can you talk a little bit about that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about, but get a little bit more specific for the question so that I can give you a clearer answer.
Yeah. So from what I understand, you know, were a quote unquote typical stripper, you know, wearing all the false lashes and like, you know, all the makeup, the hair done, da 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 da, and drinking with the boys, drinking with the clientele. So then you kind of tuned in with yourself and you were like, when do I feel sexiest? And it's not when I'm drunk. It's not when I'm done up. It's...
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head with like the essence of the story. I went through so many different like archetypes or phases of like the type of stripper that I wanted to be. And yeah, I remember like whenever I went in with the intention specifically to bring tantric work or like love and feminine embodiment into the strip club. And once I got hired and started working, reality kicked in and I was like, oh my goodness, it's not all flowers and sensual like daisies. And so for me to kind of like boost my confidence or to kind of like fit in with the other women, yeah, I did my makeup, you know, in a very stripper type of way, for lack of a better term. I wore certain types of outfits, you know, I was drinking and it was really just to like gain the confidence. And I remember one night I had a dream that I had tally marks all over my body. And I took that as a sign of like, oh, I've lost myself. I've lost myself in this industry. There's a lot of like things that I was saying yes to that was really not out of integrity, but out of intention of what my original shindig was. And so I was like, I'm just going to explore being me, like 110%. And so I started going into the club. I love G-strings. G-strings are where it's at for me, and like a little bikini top. And I bought like little velvet ones in like a million different colors. I showed up to the club barefaced, like no makeup on, like no perfume. I was like, this is just me, the earthiest of whatever. And I started making significantly more money and having significantly better customers and clients and relationships with the dancers as well. Like I started actually just like leading with my like sensuality, and I started having conversations with men and actually looking them in their eyes and being like, how are you? What's your relationship with your kids like? Tell me about your passions. And like, it was so interesting that my relationship with men, it shifted from this like finesse, like, okay, let's just play a game together, to, you know what? Like, you're here because you want love and affection and attention, and you deserve it. And it would be an honor to give it to you. And then my dances, the way that I would dance, I went from like, you know, it's a lot of grinding. You're basically dry humping a customer. And so like, that's how the dancing is. And then when I started to kind of shift what feels sexy to me, breathing with them, like breathing with them, like on their mouth. And it became like, the money increased because the slowness and the sensuality turned into, it would put them in a trance to where song after song after song after song. And then, you know, by the end of that, and then I would have customers that would caress, instead of throwing money on me, they would caress money on me. So me just really tuning into like, what makes me feel sexy? What makes me feel empowered? What makes me feel like I'm actually representing who I am as a feminine being? And again, my own authentic truth, like it completely shifted how I moved through the industry, and it made me fall in love with the industry.
I love that. Because, you know, when you're in that field, it's so easy to get wrapped up in what you should look like and what you should do and how things are supposed to work. And what does the guy want out of this? And what should I do for him? And instead mm-hmm. you totally turned it around and said, well, no, wait a minute. What do I want? How am I going to enjoy this? What's in alignment with me? And just by you expressing your authentic self in that session, you attracted that same energy back to you. That I think is the most amazing thing. So when you started doing this, would you say that you were very different from the other girls in the club? Like the way that your performance was, and like, did they notice this? Asking you questions or jealous, or, you know, how did that change the environment?
Yeah, they were never jealous. I've never felt any type of ugliness towards any of the women. We all had our different styles. Some were like very booty popping, bootylicious. Other women, you know, were kind of like more of the talkers. Like everybody had their own thing. We all really appreciated our own authentic way of just working the industry, being feminine, connecting with men, and just like really making sure that everybody was like in their own flavor.
Yeah. Oh my God. I love that. I think I used this word somewhere else, but you call this conscious stripping and like conscious dancing, which totally awesome to hear you work through that journey.
Yeah.
And so are you working on a conscious sex course? Is that correct?
Yeah, I am. So there is a femme-powered strip club in New York City called Rosewood. I'm going to backtrack a little bit because I just love the universe. I think it's amazing. Whenever I went into the industry, I was like, I want to create a conscious strip club. Like, I want it to be a place where it's like a school of feminine arts. The women come in, they learn how to dance, how to be in their boundaries, body autonomy, sacred sexuality, how to sell. All right, now let's go work tonight. You know what I mean? Versus like throwing baby strippers out into the sharks, you know? And that was like my vision for it all. And I was like, all right, well, I don't know how that's going to happen. It's just like one of those things on my vision board. Long story short, I connect with this gentleman, and he is the owner of Rosewood, and he has a femme-powered strip club. And it's the music is amazing. The women get to choose what they want to wear. They get to choose like their price points, different things of that nature. And him and another woman, you should have her on the podcast. Actually, she's amazing. Her name is Lana Shea, reached out to me, and they're like, hey, we want to expand the conscious strip club. And so I'm helping them create a course where basically everything that I just said, we're going to start talking about like conscious sexuality, how to like tune into what your boundaries are, like what is a yes, what is a no, how can you advocate for yourself, how can you, you know, approach sales in a very specific way that intervives like that direct energy, but also that feminine flirtatiousness, you know, how to take care of yourself, all of the things, because it's, I feel like in general, like we're not getting proper sex education anywhere. And so to like really, I feel like it should also be brought into like the sex work industries. It's like, okay, how can we really go about this in a way that is empowering, that promotes a lot of safety that helps us actually connect deeper to ourselves. And, you know, I also want to say, like, that's a very, very, me being able to talk about stripping in this way, and for me to be able to say, like, oh yeah, let's create a course around sacred, like, it's such a privileged thing to be like, oh, I went into stripping because it was a choice. I went into stripping because I wanted to, like, explore this side of myself. And unfortunately, there's a lot of other women whose reality is not that. It's, you know, it's a means to an end, or, you know, so many other traumatic things that can go into it. But I do feel like the more that we start actually having these more intense and intentional conversations in this environment and in this industry, it can begin to create a ripple effect and really create more safety for all forms of sex work, not just strippers.
Mm. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Amen to that. I am so excited to check this place out.
It's I'm like frantically Googling. I'm like, Rosewood Theater. Oh my God. It's only 0.5 miles from here. I gotta go.
I forgot you were in New York. That's amazing.
Yeah, baby. Oh my God. I cannot wait to go. That's so cool. And to be honest with you, I have always thought about being a stripper since I was 16 and went underage to the one in my, you know, little town in Pennsylvania. I was always like fascinated, and I had so many crushes on all the strippers, and I would just like go up to them and, like, you know, just pick their brains on what is it actually like. And I remember actually when I was in high school, I think I was 18, so I was actually allowed to be there at that point. My friend and I got a girlfriend, vanilla girlfriend. We got a couples lap dance together. And the entire time while this chick was like talking to us, it was so cute, actually. And I hope we were a breath of fresh air for her. We were like, oh my God, what perfume are you wearing? What do you do to work out? You look so good. Wait, do you have a boyfriend? What does he actually think about this? Like the entire time. And I was like, okay, I'm putting together how I can make this work. And I just chickened out. And I think it's because, you know, of the negative connotations with it, right? But if there were more opportunities like this where it's a femme-empowered place, like, I think that sounds incredible. Mm-hmm. And maybe I've found my next career move.
Absolutely.
I'm actually not kidding.
Yeah, I would love to know how that experience goes for
guys,
you.
Guys, check in with me a year from now. We'll see where we're at.
Oh my God.
I remember I took a solid like 3 months to like really sit with my decision around stripping. And one of the things that was kind of holding me back was like, you know, the stigma around it, like, oh, the slut shaming, you know, having to do like things for people that I'm not attracted to or people I don't know, things of that nature. And I was really, really deep into like recoding a lot of shame. This was like 2020. So I had like a lot of extra time in my hands. And I remember two of the major things that really stuck out was like the slut shaming aspect. And then how am I going to feel giving a lap dance to somebody I'm not attracted to? And I really started to like untangle that. And I was like, oh, well, when I think of other dancers or other women in any industry, I don't judge them. Like my mind doesn't think anything. So why would I think that about myself? And why would I let other people's judgment kind of stop me from something that I'm wanting to explore? And then when it came to dancing for somebody I wasn't attracted to, I was like, oh, wow, that's such a deeply perceived judgment. And in the eyes of God, and I was really going into it with like this tantric perspective, like every single man, regardless of what he looks like, deserves love and attention and affection and like all these things. So if I go into it with this, like, oh, let me just actually have this offering, like kind of going through all those hurdles, it was a completely different thing.
That's beautiful. I love that, thinking everyone is worthy of love. So taking it back to that and loving ourselves, let's say.
You also brought up something called solo kink. And I just wanted to understand, like, what is solo kink? What does that look like? How do we even begin to practice that? Do you have something that we could like start now at home, all of us, you know, any tips?
So primarily when I relate to solo kink, I think more of like the sensory impact, sensory experience. So there's something that I love to call a pleasure palette. And it's starting with like gathering anything that's inside of your house. And it can be like a silk cloth, a wooden spoon, a belt. If you do want to add like actual supplies, like a whip, a pinwheel, candle wax, et cetera. And just beginning to actually just explore those elements with yourself. Like the same way you would want a partner to like tie you and pour candle wax on you, like you also get the opportunity to do that with yourself. And I stumbled into solo kink because I used to be very disassociated from my body. And so I was like, okay, I need to teach myself and realize like, oh, I can feel. Like, oh, I can feel this smack. I can feel this candle wax. And so little by little, it became, again, another form of like sensual meditation. It became a way of like, okay, yeah, I am in my body. And so we can go into it with the same perspective, like gathering all of this material and then just exploring with what you do and do not like.
I feel like that's another version of be your own best friend, which is something that I've been trying to internalize. And I feel like, yeah, it's like be your own master, be your own mistress, mm-hmm. be your own lover, mm-hmm. like buy yourself mm-hmm. flowers. Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
I love that you mentioned that because now I'm like, okay, now we can go into, because on the surface level, I think of solo kink of like that, like adding those things into your pleasure palette, playing with all these things. But I love that you mentioned like being your own master and like you get to have this like inner dom, inner submissive relationship with yourself. And it's like other people can think about it of like the inner masculine and the inner feminine. But I love to think of like this, the dom as like obviously the person, not necessarily in the sense of control, but I think of dominant energy as your ability to influence the energy that's moving through you. So it's like, I'm not going to control my emotions. I'm going to influence the direction that they can go in. And can you be your inner dom in that sense? And then this is something that I tell the women that I tie all the time is like, oh yes, like you are stepping into that submissive role. Yes, you are quote unquote in a sense submitting to me, but ultimately what you're doing is submitting to yourself. Can you actually submit to the desires that are coming up, the noises that are coming up, the shadow that's coming up? And like, again, it's like the only way that you can really submit to another person is to actually submit to your submissiveness, to submit to your own desire to surrender. And then adding the extra little like psychological part of kink, right? Can you explore your secret turn-ons with yourself? Can you face not only like these shadowy, like, oh my God, that really turned me on. I don't know if I want to tell my partner. Like, can you explore that with yourself and your own fantasy? And I don't know if you've ever read Existential Kink, which is a really badass book. It's a really badass book. And it's basically
writing it down right now.
It's basically this woman saying like, we're all kinky motherfuckers. And those like, those limiting beliefs, whether it's around money or relationships, like you secretly get off on that. And that's why you are repeating that pattern over and over and over again. So it's like kink can be so multidimensional, both like sensorially and psychologically.
So, sorry, I find myself having a lot of resistance thinking about doing this to my own self. And so I think that probably means I'm someone who would be a great candidate for it. But so a couple of questions we had been thinking of beforehand is, you know, what advice do you have for those who struggle with sensuality and embodiment or might, you know, their shackles might raise to that? And also, you know, when you're tuning into yourself and noticing emotions or triggers, do you have a way to kind of discern between if I'm triggered by something, is this my body truly saying no, or is it a learned pattern that can be consciously changed? So it's like maybe society has made me feel shame about this and it's not actually something I don't want. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of two parts to that question. Yeah. Sorry.
I'm going to answer both of them, and I like how they both kind of interweave themselves together. The first question was,
what advice do you have for women who do struggle with sensuality and embodiment or like have some kind of trigger around that discomfort?
The two things. Number one, like I was saying in the beginning of this conversation, is like you're essential being regardless of anything. And like, it doesn't have to start with a self-pleasure practice. It doesn't have to start with massaging your breasts. It can literally be like, I'm washing the dishes right now and I'm going to focus on the sensation of me washing the dishes. And for people that are very disassociated or that are feeling very fearful of coming into their body, I've noticed from a lot of the conversations that I've had with other women, it's the resistance mainly flares up when it comes to those more intimate types of setting, like a self-pleasure practice or like seeing yourself naked and things like that. So what happens if you begin to bring your awareness into your physical sensations of things that you're already going to be doing on a day-to-day basis? And in a nutshell, what I'm trying to say is like, start with where you're at. like start with where your capacity is able to hold. And if right now just sitting down and breathing is like, okay, cool, I can focus on my breath, I can move inwards. Maybe right now I only have the capacity to move inwards for 3 minutes. That is an embodiment practice. That is a sensuality practice. That is you coming home to your body and reclaiming your power. And so you get to legitimately start with what feels safe, especially if the resistance is coming from, ooh, I don't feel safe doing that, or ooh, I might get triggered from going deeper into my body. And I'm sharing, that was something that was really difficult for me to learn in the beginning. Kind of what I was saying earlier was, we kind of go into practices with like, I need a fix. Oh, I'm going into this so I can just get to a particular goal. And I was so gung-ho about my healing in the beginning that I accidentally re-traumatized myself because I was overstepping my own boundaries with my own body, but didn't even know how to determine what my boundaries are to notice that I was doing that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm really, really keen on, again, move very slowly. And if you're massaging your body and you, like, this is just an example. If I say, okay, let's go into a full body massage and you're massaging your collarbones and it's time to go down to your breasts, and that's when the flight or flight response comes in, then just hang out in your collarbones. And you're doing it correctly. You're connecting to your body. You're making love to yourself, hanging out with your collarbones. And little by little, when your body starts recognizing, oh, wow, I'm safe, then you can just go a centimeter lower, but you don't need to go balls to the wall with your own body when you've had a relationship of disassociation, disconnection, and fear with intimacy with self.
I love that exercise. That's so important to take it gradually. There's something I heard called present moment relating, and it's one of those moments where you bring yourself into the current phase. And then, like you said, sensuality, you go into the five senses. What do I see right now? What do I smell right now? What am I hearing right now? What do I feel? All of those senses are really brought to that present moment. And I love that you did that. Start where you're comfortable. That is such a key tip.
I do want to talk about the non-monogamy journey. So you are non-monogamous. Is that correct?
Correct, Amundo.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And how long have you been on this journey?
2 years. 2 years and some change.
You're a newbie too.
A newbie, for sure. For sure.
And so how has this, all of your practices that you're describing and all these like solo female empowerment practices helped you in your non-monogamy journey and translated into it?
Yeah, I feel like all of my personal work didn't kick into supporting me in non-monogamy until very recently. Like, I feel like the first year and a half, I would say like the first chunk, it supported me in the sense of like, I was feeling so good and so fruitful and so solid in myself that I was like, oh yeah, baby, go do your own thing, this, that, and the third. And then I think once like the deepening of the emotions came in, I moved in with my partner, then, you know, all those like little flare-ups and things come up. And for the longest time, I was going deep into my triggers. Like, I was getting hardcore triggered. And it wasn't until very recently that I started tuning into my triggers as a game. And I started going deeper into like, it's going to sound like a little redundant, but like, okay, how can I actually feel my trigger now? Not project it, not go talk to a therapist, not go do emotional release. Like, because every time the trigger would go away, I'd be like, oh, it wasn't that big of a deal. You know what I mean? And so I started to turn it into a game of like, okay, I know he's going to go do something with XYZ. I'm going to feel this intense emotion. How deeply can I feel it? Like, how can I feel this, like, my heart racing and like all the things going through me? And so that I had to like do a lot of like shifting the narrative of like, all right, I'm going to make this trigger my bitch, and I'm actually going to play with it and let's see what happens. And I mean, it's been maybe a month and a half since I've been doing that, but it has completely transformed my relationship, like straight up.
Yeah. It's like you've consciously made the decision to change your mindset around how to feel around this particular event and how do you make it work to your advantage? Kind of like what you did with the stripping, which was like, what do I need to do here to make this feel better for me? And so you found what works for you.
There was a couple other layers when it came to sensuality. And one of the things was mental sensuality. And it's like, can you actually have those intimate conversations with yourself and like questioning like, oh, is that mine? Or I'm noticing this is here. What do I want to do with it? But you actually have to kind of feel into that narrative of like, oh, okay, I have this around scents and juices. Like, I need to accept that. I need to look into it. Let me feel what it is. Now that I've kind of created this data, now what do I consciously want to do with that information? And it's like, there's different ways of like meeting yourself. I love thinking of sensuality as like, you get to meet yourself in all these different aspects, the good, the numb, and the ugly. And from there, you can really be like, okay, like oftentimes we talk about like we're the creator of our own reality, and 110,000,000% it's true. And then oftentimes they're like, oh yeah, I'm the creator of my own reality, but these subconscious beliefs. And it's like, oh, let's again, untangle them and get them nice and neat, and then pick up the things that resonate, you know?
I am taking that quote and like just taking it with me on my journey. I'm going to make this trigger my bitch. I wish I had known that 2.5 years ago when I picked up my jealousy workbook off of Amazon and I was like working through it. I recommend it if that is something that you are working through. And it was like really helpful because it had very step-by-step, you know, analytical, really thinking, okay, is it, you know, the fact that they're texting that triggers me? No, not that. If I picture them, you know, kissing on the cheek when they say hello, does that trigger me? No. When they're sitting down, if he pays for the dinner, does that trigger me? No. Like, what is it very specifically that makes me jealous and makes me afraid? And yeah, I want to make that trigger my bitch. Yeah. Oh my God, Jacqueline.
So Jacqueline, one thing I wanted to get your opinion on. So like in this whole non-monogamy journey, you know, we talk about sex being an energy exchange. That's what usually happens. So I've read a book or two about sex priestesses and sex magic and the Temple of Isis and that kind of thing. Are you familiar with, are you familiar with sex priestess work and all of that
yes.
stuff?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So one of the books that I read, which I found to be interesting, was that she said that when you're non-monogamous, you really need to be careful for who you basically have sex with, right? Because because of this energy exchange, every person that you interact with, all the men that you interact with, you're exchanging their trauma, their history, their experiences, and all of that. And so what she basically said is in a non-monogamous relationship, you have to be careful of who you basically have sex with. Sex priestesses are trained on how to protect themselves when they're guiding these men through their experiences and kind of embracing that healing journey for these men, whatever it is that they do. What are your thoughts on that? Like not having sex so randomly or with strangers and this whole idea of the energy exchange and absorbing their trauma?
I love this question. People ask it so often. And I think number one, it's not just people in E&M that need to be conscientious of who it is that they're sleeping with. Monogamous people should as well, obviously.
Yeah.
And then I break it into like two things. My mind goes into like yes and no. The yes is because I believe like, oh yeah, we are energetic beings and having sex with somebody is very intimate. And then there's another part of me that's like, Our energetic field isn't that weak to where me interacting with another human being is all of a sudden I'm going to take on his trauma. And so my mind is kind of like that of like, be conscientious of who it is that you are sharing your sexual energy with or who you're inviting into your body. But I don't think that automatically equates to like everything now fusing together. I think it can if you're very empathic, if you're leaky in your own boundaries, if you have a particular attachment style that's just kind of how you like hold on to people. But I think that the more that you can just practice body autonomy, being aware of your own boundaries, being aware of your own energy, having an open conversation with somebody of like, oh, hey, we're going to have casual sex tonight. What does this mean for you? Like, do you need a call tomorrow? Do you want us to hang out for 3 months? Are you cool if I never talk to you again? Like, I think just like really bringing in these practical tools of how to consciously relate to another human being in this environment in general can really keep us from, again, giving our trauma to other people in sexual ways and taking on other people's traumas. That's just my perspective of it.
Yeah, no, I love that description because I've sat and thought about this question too, like as I came across this content, and it was like, I didn't agree with her 100%. And for the same thing that you just said, if we're in touch with ourselves, we know our boundaries and we're doing things that are in alignment with us, then we are doing things that build us up, not take away from us, not drain us. The more things that, as long as we're standing in our power, then it's not a problem. So glad to hear your perspective because I was so curious to understand that.
Yeah, because I think people who are in touch with their energy and attuned to their energy would attract people who would build that energy rather than take away. I think that's.
Mm-hmm. And you can also like, I've been in a monogamous relationship once for 4 years, and I feel like I took on a lot of that person's trauma, and it had nothing to do with our sex life. You know what I mean? So it's like, there's so many ways where somebody can transfer that energy to you that isn't sexual.
Yeah. Such a good point. Yeah. Such a good point.
So before we get into where everybody can find you, what would you want to leave our listeners with? Let's give them a nugget.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of meeting yourself is like the first thing that's coming to mind. Don't be afraid of like tapping into every single aspect of who you are. And let that be the numbness, let that be the ugliness, let it be the jealousy, let it be like the high priestesship, and like just get really curious of like all these different aspects of yourself that you get to be.
I think that is a great nugget for our non-monogamous listeners, because I feel like that is a refrain that we keep coming back to over and over again, is that by having different partners, by having the communication that it requires to be in an ethically non-monogamous relationship, we are constantly exploring different sides of ourselves and meeting different parts of ourselves. So don't be afraid. Oh, mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Jacqueline Michelle.
Thank you.
Oh, girl. I'm like about to go take a shower after this, and I'm like, I can't wait to like wash my hair sensually. And oh my God.
And be present. Yeah. So tell us, Jacqueline, what you're working on. What are your offerings? Where can people find you and how to work with you?
Yes, ma'am. So I have four main offerings circulating at this moment. One, the newest one is my Sensually Liberated membership. It is my lowest ticket offer. It is a membership form that has sensual movement, stretching videos, meditation, body work. There's a book club in it. We meet every Wednesday. And then there's a community form. So all the women that are on a sensually liberated journey that are reconnecting to their bodies have a place to connect to one another. So it's very community sent, like focused. I have my self-paced course called Boundless. It interweaves sensuality, somatic healing, and rope bondage all together. So you get to learn how to have your own self-pleasure practice. I have my one-on-one mentorship, Selfhood. This is a 3 to 6 month program where we go deep and into the nitty-gritty of your subconscious wiring, any blockages, any things that are holding you back, and really helping you tap into empowerment, sensual liberation, tapping into your femininity in a really powerful way. And then my in-person offering, Sensual Shibari, which is a 2-hour experience of being tied, being held, being guided into your sensuality and surrendering into all of that. And then you can find me on the gram, Instagram / JAQUEMICH.
Okay. Check it out, because it is a sight to behold. The energy that you put into the world is just so beautiful. And I'm so glad that you have not been shut down. And if they ever think of shutting you down again, that's ridiculous. Yeah.
No, I learned to respect like the Instagram's boundaries. Instagram is allowed to have boundaries too.
Yeah.
Oh, girl. Wow. Okay. Yes.
New perspective. Yeah. New perspective. I was poo-pooing them this whole time, and now I feel bad.
They're allowed to have boundaries too. Oh my God. Amazing.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. We totally feel and absorbed your energy today, and hopefully it permeates through all of our listeners and they take this with them.
Yeah.
Moving forward.
Thank you for having me.
We hope you enjoyed that amazing, deep, beautiful conversation with Jack Mitch. Go follow her. And on that note, while you're on Instagram, please go follow us, Girls Gone Deep Pod. And while you're at it, go ahead and follow our backup account as well, Girls Gone Deep Pod _, because who knows? With Instagram's boundaries, you never know if we'll still be around tomorrow. Knock on wood. So If you did not hear on last week's episode, we are working on launching a website and merch in the upcoming weeks. So be sure to follow us on Instagram, where you will get all of the latest updates, discounts, and giveaways.
Another reason you should all follow our podcast too is now that we have this merch shop is we're going to be offering some limited edition items, some sales and discounts and special promos. So you don't want to be missing those things. So follow us so that you can get access. Early access to any of that hot content that won't be around for so long.
Yeah. So speaking of all of those special things and giveaways, anyone who follows us as of April 1st, commemorating the month L is due, you will be eligible for our Horrible Life Slut Stakes giveaway. We will be choosing a winner at random from our Instagram followers to receive their very own deck of Horrible Life to get their own party started and break the ice. So be sure you're following Girls Gone Deep Pod on Instagram before April 1st. Thank you to our sponsor, Horrible Life. Go to horriblelife.com and use code GONEDEEP to get 10% off your first deck. As always, use the link in our description to shop for all your sexy gear at Woo More Play. They are a premium line of organic intimacy products. We swear by them, and particularly the Freshy Wipes, which make your pussy smell like vanilla freaking icing. So go ahead and use the link in our description to quickly take you to the Woo More Play site and shop for all your sexy gear.
Thank you.
All right. So we will catch everybody on the next episode. I'm Elle.
And I'm V.
And thank you for
Oh, and I'm Jacqueline.